It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running. Yes, this program is live. We are back from the road, from our little trip up to the D.C. area for the interment ceremony for my aunt. And tickled to be back, I might add. It's the 25th day of June 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you find us, among other places. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the madcap, merry, zany, wacky, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the chat room during the time in which this program is live each evening from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific. If you pick out a screen name and a password, you'll be immediately greeted and welcomed by the likes of Anatole and Hoghead and Squeaky and Terry and B.T. Blom, and as well as longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, though a spacing guild master, has contented himself with being with not folding space and being Sparky for the evening. I take it it's getting a mite warm out there in the far reaches of not quite so far northern California. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Moran Monday here. And gosh almighty, do we have a lot of potential Morans to examine. But before we jump into the meat of things, a couple of program notes. One, the program tonight and tomorrow will be only 2 hours long. That's because at 9 o'clock I will strike a spark onto the tinder of the Truth Seeker campfire and fill in for our good friend Malloy while he's out ailing. I presume most of you have heard by now, Mike apparently got spider bit, and apparently a nasty spider. So he's been ailing for the past several days, and we'll be out this evening, and then I'll be in the chair tomorrow evening as well. And we all send our best energies and healing hopes and wishes, no prayers, along to Mike and Kathy, of course, taking superb care of him. So the program's 2 hours tonight and tomorrow, and then we'll return to something approaching normal. You know, normal's only a setting on a dryer. Come prayer meeting Wednesday, okay? We have thanks to send out at the beginning of every program. In this case, we have thanks to send out to Pam in Washington. Thank you, Pam, for being a partial sponsor of the program through the subscription program. And thanks also to Jason. Thank you, Jason, very kindly in California for continuing to help support the program. Thanks as well. Go out, and there's going to be a lot of thanks because we had several days here. Thanks to Asa. Thank you very kindly. Not Brother Deacon Asa. We've got two Asas. Thank you very kindly to Asa, and thank you to Kay in California. Thank you very kindly indeed for your help. Thanks as well to Libby. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. Another partial, supporter of the program on a monthly basis through the subscription function there. If you'd like to be a subscriber, you can always go to headon.live and just click on the PayPal icon, and it'll show you what to do if you want to just set it and forget it. Remember, a $10 a month subscriber helps make the program available for everyone who wants it. And it works out to being something less than the half the cost of a McDonald's hamburger today. I know. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Philip in Maryland. And thank you very kindly to Stacy in Pennsylvania, Penn's Woods. Thank you to Joyce in Washington. Thanks as well to... thanks as well to Paula and Joe. Thank you very kindly. I put up a post over on the Facebooks, pointing out just where we were relative to fundraising, and Paula responded accordingly to the to a challenge. Thank you, and extended a challenge for another $25. More on that in a minute. Thank you very kindly. To Jamie, and thank you very kindly to Earl. Thanks, Earl. Thanks go out to Felicia, formerly of Omaha, not any longer. Thank you, Felicia. Thank you very kindly to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you to Michael. Thank you, Michael, very kindly. And thank you to Bill in Florida, as well as to Ralphs, and to our buddy Joy up in Michigan, responding to the Facebook post the other day. And thanks to Beth down in Dallas. Beth and the Beth and all the feathered critters that she takes care of in her backyard, including a really fantastic turkey. Thanks very much indeed to our buddy Steve in New York. And thanks to Joan in Talibandiana. Thank you, Joan, so very much. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to Dave in Vermont. And I think that takes care of the subscriptions that rolled in since I got ready to leave. And since we did leave. And I'm informed by multiple parties that we are hot and live on both of the streams. That's a good thing to know. We both at headon.live and on the White Rose stream. Glory hallelujah. It's nice when everything works. And so, where do we find ourselves? Well, I'll just put this out there, and, you know, if we knocked it down this evening, that would mean we would have 4 days of fundraising-free radio. 4 whole days. Heck, if we knocked it down, like, right quick, we'd have almost 5 whole days, 5 whole broadcasts of fundraising-free radio. $500 is where it stands to finish off the month of June. If we, you know, 10 at 50, 50 at 10, or permutations on that, but we are at $500 to finish the month and have fundraising free radio. As soon as we raise the $500, no more fundraising talk until, goodness gracious sakes alive, early July. Yeah, because July, in fact... July begins on a Sunday, and then don't worry about the holiday week. I'll be here, without a doubt. The 4th of July is in the middle of the week, so I won't be taking the night off. Everybody else can go and celebrate the independence of the United States, and maybe we'll talk about it some, because it'll fall on a prayer meeting Wednesday, okay? All right, so that's pretty much all the housekeeping for the evening, and that means that we can move boldly into Moran Monday, because like I said, lots and lots of Morans. A note first coming from Ron and Raleigh. Since you've been gone, have you noticed a flood of articles stating that Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are going to run out of money sooner than expected? The only solution that is ever mentioned is cutting benefits. How is it we can add a huge bump to the so-called defense budget, yet can't find money to shore up the safety net? Not only that, but Cheeto Jesus wants to start another branch of the military called the Space Force. I guess he doesn't like any aliens. How much will this boondoggle cost? I'll bet the Space Force will have some spiffy uniforms like the suits the Martian Marines wear on the Expanse. Yeah, or probably, you want to talk about spiffy uniforms. I was thinking more in terms of Marvin Martian. If you know what I mean there, Ron. Yeah. I mentioned the numbers, I guess it was Wednesday night last. Terrifying numbers. $1.5 trillion in cuts to Medicaid, because we've got to pay for the tax cuts that we gave to people like the Koch brothers, you know, because they're hurting, you know, they really are. And just, you know, with their little noses pressed up against the frosty window panes, watching all those pores eating all that damn ramen. Mm-hmm. And Social Security, Medicare, it's all in the mix. And it's all on the chopping block. And so, you know, just a reminder of another reason why getting the answer to the questions right come, what is it, November 6th of this year? Then that becomes, sort of an imperative. Question coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. Is the jar of Hatch chili salsa still with us? Part of it is. Because, and I don't know if Todd's listening down in South Carolina, Stan, but many of you have said, "Oh, Bob, you've got to try Trader Joe's. You've got to check out Trader Joe's." Well, I did. I put a little post up about it on Facebook. We had a lot of fun there. It's just fun to see new things that don't exist here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump Genius Stan. But I've done my part. They've actually at TraderJoe's.com, they've got a link where you can fill out a very brief form and say, "Please send a Trader Joe's to my town." So I suggested Charleston. They like to have an address in the area. So, but maybe members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who are actually from West Virginia could go and maybe, because wouldn't it be nice to have an alternative to Wally World? But yeah, I did a little bit of shopping at Trader Joe's. They did not have the Josefsbräu Kölsch Todd spoke so glowingly of, so I didn't do any of that. Plus, I'm not supposed to drink beer or anything, so right. But I got some wonderful stuff. They had a curry chicken salad I couldn't deny it to myself, and it turned out to be kind of sweet. Had some raisins in it, some carrots and stuff. Delicious. Absolutely wonderful. And boy did I feel hip. I got a container of cauliflower curried quinoa salad. I know. That almost made me want to run out to the vintage clothing store and buy an old auto mechanic shirt with the little oval on it that says, you know, Fred. I was feeling so damn hip. But the highlight, and some, let's see, there were some green chili chicken tamales. Those will be, you know, maybe in they'll go in the freezer, and maybe in a week or so when, 2 weeks maybe, when I'm absolutely certain that it won't send me into paroxysms of agony, we'll try those. But my insides don't seem to mind things like Hatch green chili salsa, and boy was it yummy. And I've never seen it in Kroger, never seen it in Wally World. I've not seen it in Aldi or Food Lion. No, that stuff was magic. Oh, yes, it was. But the real hit, the one that really grabbed me, was a little bottle imported from Japan of yuzu, Y-U-Z-U, hot sauce. Ooh, goodness gracious, it's good. I mean, all kinds of tasty. Bright and citrusy, sharp, and with a beautiful, beautiful hot fire to it. We had a little bit of leftovers from all the barbecue I did to take with us. 84 bones of ribs. Yep. And they were gone in 15 minutes, by the way. But I had a little bit of pulled pork left over. Brought it home. And the minute I tasted that yuzu sauce, I said, this has got to have... So I heated up a couple of tiny bites of pulled pork, splashed some of that yuzu sauce on it, and oh, my heavenly days, you want to talk about delicious. Yeah, why not jump into the food porn early in the program? Because, after all, when we go into the Moran Monday swamp, there's no turning back. But that, for those of you who have a Trader Joe's, that it's over there with the other hot sauces, the green and the sriracha, or at least it was in the store there in Old Virginia. No, Randy in PA says, I know why your innards are all screwed up, it's all the hot sauce. No, it's really not. I tolerate hot sauce just fine. And in fact, hot sauce really doesn't wreck your gut. All the effect is on the front end, on the taste buds. It's never given me any problems. No, it's fats and processed foods and garbage like that. That does a job on me. Silent R. Lamar saying, it's just the Mexican in you, Bob. It's why you can eat it. Well, I would be honored if there was some Mexican in me, but I think I'm pretty palely, boringly... Mostly English, little bit of German, some Scottish, white, but oh well. But that, yeah, that yuzu sauce is not to be. Bummed me out. There was an empty spot there that said, "Try our new aged Havarti," and the aged Havarti was not there, so I didn't get any of that either. Bummer. Or as Margie said when she was little, and I told a parental fib. Because we were in a hurry to get somewhere, and she wanted to go to Toys R Us. And I said, no, baby, it's closed. And little tiny Margie responded, Bummer. And I get reminded of that like 3 or 4 times a year. Yeah. But it really was. It was fun going to Trader Joe's. We had a nice drive over, nice drive back. I can say very good things. We had to rent a vehicle. I can say because I don't take the family, the family truckster does not go on long drives. Just don't feel comfortable about that. But I can say very nice things about the Nissan Altima. Comfortable, quick, nimble, awesome on gas. And so we got over there on Thursday, drove back on Saturday. But it was awfully good to see family. I don't have any extended family around here anymore. I got to see my sister, who is the only member of my immediate family that I grew up in, who remains. And we had a nice time together, and we tasted. See, she's older than me, and I got my predilection for hot and spicy things from her. So I got that yuzu sauce and immediately ran down to her room with some tortilla chips and said, "You gotta taste this." And she was over the moon. It was, yeah, ooh, that's good. And unfortunately, there is no Trader Joe's where she lives either. So we may have to start a campaign on the Gulf Coast. But I was proud of how the ribs were received and the pulled pork. It all disappeared very quickly and was much enjoyed. No, Anatole, we didn't take the Gulfstream 5 for this trip. It's, you know, when you fire up the Gulfstream 5 for a trip like D.C., it's just, you know, you're up in the air and then you're on the way down again. It's just, in terms of air miles, it's just too close. It's not worth the effort. And then you have to, battle through the traffic anyway, so... stayed in a nice little comfort inn in Arlington, wonderfully staffed. Took barbecue, took pulled pork sandwiches and ribs to the front desk staff because they were so good in dealing with us, and they were absolutely tickled. One of the desk clerks saying, "When your wife decides to divorce you, you just come on over here, and all you got to do is make the barbecue, and everything else will be taken care of." Agnes responded with a, "Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Bye, Bob." "No, please, baby, don't leave me." Food porn coming in from Ron and Raleigh. "I just cracked open a jar of Blue Smoke sweet onion salsa made in Gap Mills, West Virginia. That used to be made in, about 2 miles from here until they sold out. Not a big fan of the regular salsa because there's a ton of sugar in it. But they did a lot of good work while they were here. Blue Smoke salsa, original, almost level West by Cole Trump Jr. stand. Ron says, "By the way, they're closing all the Krogers in my area." Ah, shit. Probably union busting, right? That's usually how it goes with the Krogers. Or the Walmarts put them out of business or whatever. I hate to hear that, because the private selection... I love the private selection stuff at Kroger's. It's a really good in-store brand. But if I had a TJ's, I could do both. And never have to walk into the world of Wally ever again. Yes, right. Thank you, Silent R. Lamar. And next time, use Air Bob 1 and helicopter in. Yeah, we could have just landed on the roof, couldn't we? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that's the little Bob's Hillbilly Adventure portion of the program. Found out there was a Mickey D's next to the motel. Never before in my life have I heard of a McDonald's that does not serve biscuits and gravy. But not in, you know, I mean, if it was up in some heathen state where they don't know about the goodness of gravy, I could understand. But this was, you know, old Virginia. And no. So it's probably just as well they didn't have it, because I probably would have eaten it. And, well, who knows? I might not be on the air now. thank you. Thank you. Lee in New York says, "Agnes will not leave you unless you stop cooking for her." I will never do that. I will absolutely never do that. Clarence, I presume still of Philadelphia, says, "I'm a regular customer of TJ's. Probably was in the store with Todd without knowing about it. I've shopped at the Jenkintown, PA, Marlton, New Jersey, and Columbia, South Carolina stores. I love it. It's just pleasant. I got a little bag of mandarin oranges, and, you know, smaller than a golf ball. You can peel them with your thumb. And, have, you know, it's all just one piece of peeling when you're done. You pop it in, it's slightly bigger than a jawbreaker, and those things are sweet as candy. Oh, they're good. Oh, they're good. These are all, by the way, unpaid product placements, in case anyone's wondering. So that, you know, when I recommend Trader Joe's, you know that I mean it, because I'm not being paid to do it. Yeah, okay, Marty says, obligatory Star Trek reference. I'd wait until Mr. Scott repairs the transporter unit, I understand. But sometimes you just got to go anyway. But it is Moran Monday, and, I mean, it used to be. Way back when we were in the days of the Kenyan Muslim usurper, you could slip away for a couple of days, and you'd feel like you could hit the ground running when you got back, and it wouldn't feel like the world had changed on a massive basis in 48 hours or anything. And even during the reign of error of Dim Leader, the same. I mean, in the reign of error, you knew they were going to be evil when they were evil when you were leaving, and they were going to be evil when you got back. But it didn't have the character of what we have now. So I closed the mic at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Wednesday. By sunrise on Thursday, as we were getting ready to leave for D.C., shit was already back at a hoppin' rollin' boil. And I did the best I could to sort of tune out a little bit and focus on, you know, being with family. And then on the way back on Saturday, you know, I just turned the news on. Holy shit! Really? I mean, it... And we'll spend considerable time following up on Marty's message. Lee in New York says, when Scotty has to fix the transporter, you have to head for the shuttle bay. Yes. Well, that would be a lovely idea, Brother Deacon Asa. You ought to get him to sponsor the program. This portion of... Oh, that's the future program. Kebab Talk. K-I-B-O-B. Kincaid, Bob. Brought to you by Trader Joe's Private Selection. Yeah, that's the political cooking show that exists in Asa and my and Asa's imaginations. You know, fooling around with making ribs or pulled pork or something on a blazing hot griddle and doing the kind of conversation we have here. In an alternative universe, it's a huge hit. I can tell you that. But part of the irony of some of the shit that blew up. Let's go back. Ron and Raleigh talking about the grocery stores in his neck of the woods down in North Carolina stand. We have nearby a Trader Joe's, Aldi's, Lidl, Harris Teeter, Publix, and soon a Wegmans. Yes, Harris Teeter is owned by Kroger and is not unionized. The severance packages being offered are insulting. 1,500 plus people out of work, 20 years service, and you get $1,000 before taxes. Hoo-wee. That's not exactly a severance package. That's more like that's cold shoulder with the grease congealed on it. But that's also America in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century, when we're not exactly making the forward progress toward that Star Trek future that we all were sort of hoping we'd be making. So, you know, again, that's part of that's part of paying attention and getting the answers right. Come say November. But like I said, it was a little bit ironic because when we leave here to go to D.C., just to give you a general idea of the route, we go down I-64 eastbound, and we get on I-81 northbound at a little burg called Lexington, Virginia. It's the home of Washington and Lee College or University, and also the home of the Virginia Military Institute, Virginia's answer to the Citadel, or maybe the Citadel's South Carolina's answer to VMI, I don't know. Both schools have been around for a while. And we usually stop in Lexington and top off the tank so we don't have to fool around trying to buy gas in the greater D.C. area. And we do the same thing in reverse on the way home. And, of course, Lexington, Virginia is the home of a farm-to-table restaurant called the Red Hen. Whereat a kerfuffle ensued, I guess, what, Friday night? A note coming in from Agnes. That's right, we live in the same house and text each other. Welcome to modern technology. That's right, Bob. The eye of Agnes is upon you. Beer. Yeah, sure. But you can find the White Witch of the Soap Isle because she had a right to be there. Silent R. Lamar says, no, Bob, it's called Reagan economics when you get nothing for your service to a company. Well, let's not hang it all on Ronnie Reagan. That's Republican economics, Silent R. No doubt about it. But anyway, the Red Hen in Lexington is a good two, depending on how fast you're driving, two and a half hours drive out of D.C. It's 72 miles from the smack dab in the middle of D.C. out to where I-66 intersects with I-81. And then from I-81 down to the junction with I-64. So that's an hour. Yeah. You know, it's about, I'd say, 2 hours 15, depending on traffic, two and a half hours, to get from D.C. down to the Red Hen. And that's the part of the kerfuffle that I can't quite wrap my head around. D.C. is awash in great restaurants and good restaurants. So why in the... was... Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags and her lion smoky eyes 2.5 hours away in Lexington, Virginia? I have a theory. After seeing that Kirstjen Nielsen, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, who has a big hand in the conspiracy to kidnap immigrant children and put them in cages in concentration camps, since she got run out of a Mexican restaurant because she has no respect whatsoever for the goddess of irony. I mean, why couldn't they all just go to fucking Chick-fil-A? Chick-fil-A loves them some trumpansies and maggots and so forth, and they hate them some gay folks. They'd be right at home, sitting there munching away on the little nuggets and tenders and the Chick-fil-A sandwiches. You know, the damn things were tasty once upon a time. And they were tasty because, as I understand it, part of the coating of the Chick-fil-A is that powdered sugar, not granulated, but powdered sugar in the breading mix, and wow, it makes a difference. But no, it wasn't enough, and so Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbags finds herself 2.5 hours away thinking that she's going to be safe because she goes to a county that voted in old Virginia, that voted overwhelmingly for her boss, Julius Geezer. Right? Right. There's only one problem. The county voted overwhelmingly for Julius Geezer, but the little town, Lexington, Virginia, voted overwhelmingly for Hillary. And the Red Hen is a nice little place. And as do many restaurants, the Red Hen has a not inconsiderable contingent of gay people on its staff. And so, in galumphs, Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbags with her party of deplorables. And the owner of the premises wasn't even, the owner of the restaurant wasn't even on the premises. And they called her and went, and her name's Wilkinson. What the hell do we do? Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbags is here. And so she comes in and she talks to her staff. And here's an interesting part that's not really being reported that much by the for-profit media and the hand-wringers and the pearl-clutchers out there. They did some democracy back in the kitchen. They took a vote. Do we serve a known liar who lies for a living, who mistreats other people who do not mistreat her? Do we refuse service to a woman who claims to be a Christian and claims to have deeply held religious beliefs that go against everything that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life? Do we serve her, or do we act upon our values and say no? In that little act of democracy, the vote wasn't even close. And they said, no, we don't want to serve her. Our consciences, that will become important, prevent it. And so the owner of the restaurant went out and spoke, said, would you step out here onto the veranda with me, and explain to her that the staff didn't want anything to have to do with serving her. And they didn't have a little MAGA frenzy or anything. They got up, they offered to pay. She said, nope, we're comping everything. It's all on the house. Get the fuck out. No, they didn't say get the fuck out. They were completely professional about it. Well, by the next morning, Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbags is having a big old sad on her official press secretary Twitter feed. That's important. She tried to do harm to a little business in Lexington, Virginia, by using the official communications channel on a social media platform of the office of the press secretary of the White House. This is arguably illegal. And then, of course, the the chlamydia Claudius got in on the act and talked about, you know, it's a dirty place. They don't clean. They need to focus on cleaning up their place and not do. Shut up. Also using the power of the presidency to try to destroy a business. But this raises a question. And God knows the pearl clutchers and the hand wringers have been having a tizzy ever since. Manifested in particular by one of the more idiotic op-eds that I've ever seen in a lot of idiotic op-eds that have come off the pages of the Washington Post. I'm not talking about the day-to-day reporting. I'm talking about the op-ed stuff. And this is a surefire bona fide Moran Monday nomination. You might want to get the hockey puck and the duct tape out for this. The Washington Post writing on its editorial page, passions are running high. Those who defend the Red Hen staff or Ms. Nielsen's hecklers say this is no ordinary policy dispute. Mr. Trump has ordered terrible violations of human rights at the border. He is demonizing immigrants by his actions and his rhetoric, and people need to speak up however they can. They will get no argument from us, stentorianly continues the op-ed writers at the Washington Post, regarding Mr. Trump's border policy, and when it comes to coarsening the debate, he is the prime offender. The poisonous fruits could be seen, as it happens, Saturday morning in a vile tweet from Ms. Sanders' father, former Arkansas governor, and they don't add diabetes cure snake oil salesman, that really should be included there, Mike Huckabee, that associated House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, a California Democrat with the vicious MS-13 gang. I think we're going to have to start using the reverb whenever we see that. MS-13 gang! You know, because they're everywhere, just like the is are. Right. But here's the hockey puck part. We nevertheless, and you'll have to talk like that when, because, oh my God. We nonetheless would argue that Ms. Huckabee and Ms. Nielsen and Mr. Miller, too, should be allowed to eat dinner in peace. Those who are insisting that we are in a special moment justifying incivility should think for a moment how many Americans might find their own special moment. How hard is it to imagine, for example, people who strongly believe that abortion is murder, deciding that judges or other officials who protect abortion rights should not be able to live peaceably with their families. No, they really said that. They really wrote that. How many abortion and women's reproductive health care providers have the Christians murdered? Let's see. Back in, what, 1996, there was a bomb set off by a Christian fetus fetishist in, Olympic Park in Atlanta. Then there was Dr. Tiller, who was referred to as Tiller the Killer night after night after night after night after night by that toxic little gnome, the lecherous little leprechaun, Bill O'Reilly, until somebody took him up on it and murdered Dr. Tiller. And there's a bunch of other ones, too. But the hand-wringers and the pearl clutchers there at the Washington Post can't be bothered to recall those things. They're just worried about the fact that Sarah Hasselbeck's sandbags didn't get to put the feed bag on over to the Red Hen. And the nastiest architects of the conspiracy to kidnap immigrant children, well, they've got, as the Washington Post says, they deserve to eat their dinner in peace. And look, I'll go there. I don't have a problem going there. I guess I guess they would have thought that maybe Heydrich should have been able to enjoy his Schnitzengrubens without being put upon by, say, you know, people who didn't want to be holocausted. And doggone those Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto. Why weren't they more civil? See how it works? You know, a long time ago, it seems now, with the beginning of the Trump regime, I tried to get a little hashtag started. Never did really get legs. But I simply used the hashtag no collaboration. No collaboration. And the owner of the Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia, apparently feels the same way. She felt like she had reached a moment in time where to simply sit there and not say anything, to be silent in the face of the presence of manifest evil in a business that she had worked so hard to build up, would be tantamount to being complicit with the evil. And her gay staff members and other staff members felt the same way. And yet the airwaves have been full of people say, oh, no, no, we've got to let them eat their dinner in peace. And it reminded me of the, because so many things do, it reminded me of the, quote I use as my signature line on some of my email. It comes from the late great Kurt Vonnegut. And all it says is, and it's just one sentence, but it carries so much freight. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous, industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. Well, Ms. Wilkinson down at the Red Hen is not one of those people who has gone hard of hearing to her conscience. But it's pretty clear to me that the folks who write editorials at the Washington Post have. They seem to think that there's some sort of a disconnect between what one does in one's daily life and who one is when one goes home, as if somehow we can bifurcate that and be a monster at work and then come home and be, in Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags' case, a loving mommy. You coming home and looking the bed. Oh, that's your mommy's baby. Who loves who loves the baby? That's right. You're sweet and you're white. And you're never going to be put in a dog cage. No, siree. Mm-mm. No, mommy wouldn't let them do that. And they wouldn't want to do that because you're white. Yeah. Note coming in from Ron in the maybe even dried out and not even squishy north anymore. I'd also note that one of the original nasty comments on the Red Hen originated with a fat, dyspeptic ex-Vietnam vet who got grazed by a piece of shrapnel and who's been pissed off and increasingly white-winged since he's returned to the homeland over 50 years ago without the benefit of a parade and a full disability pension. He also called for the IRS to investigate their books. I've known this particular asshole for almost my entire life, and he really doesn't bring anything valuable to the gene pool, but I digress. Well, this is one of those moments where we get to say, Hillary was right. They are deplorables. To be deplorable is to be worthy or deserving. Worthy is probably the wrong word. Deserving of being deplored. And supporting the kidnapping and the conspiracy that surrounds it of little children of tender years and on upwards is pretty well deplorable in my book. Ron and Raleigh with a note. By the way, while you were in D.C., did you detour so you could either spit on or dance on Charles Krauthammer's grave? No, he was. He turned up dead right after we got there. But I did manage to catch a little bit of the hand wringing and pearl clutching and eulogization of that guy. Hopefully, you know, if there's an afterlife and if there are ghosties and whatnot, hopefully Charles Krauthammer will be met somewhere in the great beyond by about 5,000 or 6,000 dead American service people who died because people like Charles Krauthammer said that we absolutely had to stop Saddam and we had to have that war of goddamn choice that dim leaders and Count Dicula started back in 2003, and that was a howling, disastrous mistake that we all knew was a mistake, but, a bunch of fucking hippies. So I figure I'll just let them take care of him, assuming there's an afterlife. Oh, he was roundly praised. Mainly for his civility. Because he could smile and use erudite turns of phrase and big words and not come to blows with his intellectual opponents over issues of public policy and law and politics and culture. He could talk easily about the need to slaughter 1 million Iraqi civilians and just wait for the next forkload of oyster to be shoved into his maw, because he, by God, had him some civility. Overrated civility. But I mentioned conscience. Oh, wait a minute. Of note, says Brother Deacon Asa, is the fact that they didn't necessarily refuse to serve Sarah Huckleberry Slanders. They brought her a cheese board. Oh, yeah, and they comped the cheese plate, too. But then they said, we'd rather not. We'd prefer you leave. And then she got a terrible, terrible sad. But conscience. Mm-hmm. Conscience. Apparently there is conscience in this country and there is conscience. If a person has conscience that says, Jesus would not want me to feed you dinner because you're actively involved in everything that in everything that he ever preached against, well, that conscience doesn't count in America. On the other hand, as Robert in Australia points out, if you don't have to make a cake for a gay couple because it offends your deeply held religious beliefs, you don't have to serve arseholes. That should be the way it works. But of course, they're tender and delicate, the maggots and the perpetrators of crimes against humanity. And they want to get to be all bifurcated, like I said. You know, it reminds me of and I know the book is fraught with problems, but still, Atticus Finch in in To Kill a Mockingbird, tries to instill some level of morals and ethics in his children. And he explains to them that he has to be the same man at home that he is when he's out in public during his business day. That otherwise he's a hypocrite. That the values he tries to instill in his children at home have to be the values that he lives in the wider world. Well, this is the antithesis of the argument being made by the Washington Post, morons. The editorial board, morons. Because they're saying that, well, you know, when you're done kidnapping and conspiring to kidnap children and commit crimes against humanity, when 5 o'clock rolls around, you just get in the car and you go home, and you're a different person who didn't do that. This, of course, militates against every iota of law that has developed in the years since 1945. The fact that, well, it's been used from time, you know, well, Hitler liked dogs, right? That does not provide a defense to crimes against humanity. I love my children does not provide a defense to crimes against humanity. I was only following orders does not present a defense to crimes against humanity, and make no mistake that what is happening on the southern border of the United States is, in fact, a long-running, massive crime against humanity for which we would have long since convened a panel at The Hague if it was any other country on earth but the United States. But we're the bullies. And we've got more nukes than anybody else, so no one dare indict a syphilitic Caesar for his crimes against humanity. Oh, no. And by extension, well, if you're a bigot, even if you're a corporate bigot, like, say, Hobby Lobby, a corporation can have deeply held religious beliefs that prevent it from being forgiven by Jesus if women who work for them are able to get their slut pills on an insurance plan that they provide under the... Yeah, right, we remember. And yes, that's the way that white wingers the various and sundry birchers, deathers, baggers, booger eaters view contraception as just slut medicine. Yeah, that's conscience. Norma Jean Handwiper runs a bakery and doesn't want to bake a cake for a couple of gay guys who want to get married. Oh, that's conscience. But actually following the Beatitudes, actually following the stuff in Matthew 25, or following that verse that says that anyone who would hurt these children would be better off if they had a millstone around their neck and were thrown into the sea. No, that's not the right kind of conscience. On the other hand, if you are a pharmacist in Arizona, Stan, well, Snowflake, you get to have a conscience too. And that conscience was on display at a Walgreens in the very recent past. A pregnant woman named Nicole Mone, had been to her obstetrician She was 2 months into her pregnancy. And some early diagnostic work had been done, and her doctor informed her at an appointment that her baby was not okay, and her baby would not be okay, and that there was really no choice but to terminate the pregnancy, because carrying a baby that dies in the womb, and maybe guys, especially evangelical, pasty-faced, doughy, white, fetus fetishist, evangelical, fundamentalist guys, might not know, but for a woman to carry a dead fetus inside her, it can make her very, very sick and even kill her. Not every decision to terminate a pregnancy is because, as the white wingers like to say, she's using abortion as birth control or contraception. No, Nicole Monet had found out that she had no choice in terminating her pregnancy. Her pregnancy had to be terminated. Well, she did have a choice. She had the choice of having the pregnancy terminated either surgically or chemically. And she opted to have it done pharmaceutically, chemically. So the doctor wrote her the required prescription, and she took it to Walgreens in Peoria, Arizona. I didn't know there was a Peoria, Arizona, but apparently there is. And in Peoria, Arizona, there is a Walgreens. And in Arizona, Stan, a pharmacist who has a religious belief about the precious little fetuses, well, that pharmacist can say, screw you, lady. You may have a prescription written by a licensed physician in this state, but my conscience says I need not participate in your crime. You murder, you baby-killing, murderous you. And that's exactly what happened there in Peoria, Arizona at Walgreens. The pharmacist looked at her prescription and said, I cannot serve you based upon my moral grounds. And not only does Arizona allow you to do that, Walgreens company policy says you can do that. That's right. Walgreens hires pharmacists. You can get hired to do a fairly well-paying job at Walgreens and at the same time tell them that you will refuse to do your job. And Walgreens says, kill. How about that? Yep. And that's what the pharmacist did. Ms. Moan went on to share a screenshot of a photograph of the business card naming the pharmacist, and she put it on social media. My lovely wife first shared this story with me, and she wept as she read it to me. The conscience-laden pharmacist is a guy by the name of Brian Hreniuk, H-R-E-N-I-U-C, it appears. It looks like an I, I don't think it's an L. working for the Walgreens at 9040 West Peoria Avenue in Peoria, Arizona. The 35-year-old woman, whom he declined to serve because of his precious conscience, wrote it up on Facebook. She said, "This post isn't something I generally do, but last night I experienced something no women should ever have to go through, especially under these circumstances or any other circumstances." As I read this, imagine, just in your mind's eye, picture Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags outraged, I tell you, that she was turned away from the trough because she supports a policy of crimes against humanity and the kidnapping and disappearance of infants at the border. Just kind of keep that tucked back there. The woman in Arizona, and I really wish I knew how to pronounce her last name. There's no indication over the M-O-N-E. She said, "I hadn't planned on telling anyone outside our immediate family, but 2 months ago, we were surprised to find out I was pregnant. After a previous miscarriage, the doctor had been monitoring me weekly. Unfortunately, on Tuesday, we found out that the baby's development had stopped, and I ultimately will have a miscarriage. The doctor gave me two options, a D&C or prescription medication. I opted for prescription. Last night, I went to pick up my medication at my local Walgreens, only to be denied the prescription I need. I stood at the mercy of this pharmacist explaining my situation in front of my 7-year-old and 5 customers standing behind, only to be denied because of his ethical beliefs. I get it. We all have our beliefs. But what he failed to understand is this isn't the situation I had hoped for. This isn't something I wanted. This is something I have zero control over. He has no idea what it's like to want nothing more than to carry a child to full term and be unable to do so." If you have gone through a miscarriage, you know the pain and emotional roller coaster it can be. In fact, the term we assign to it, miscarriage, we probably need to find another word. Because that language, that word, presumes in the usage of the word miss that somehow the woman carried her baby wrongly. Like, she didn't stick her tongue out of the corner of her mouth when she was stepping and accidentally stepped on a crack and broke the baby's back or something like that. Spontaneous abortion is the medical term, I do believe. And we should use it, except that, you know, the snowflakes don't like to hear the A word. If you've gone through a miscarriage, you know the pain and emotional roller coaster it can be. "I left Walgreens in tears, ashamed and feeling humiliated by a man who knows nothing of my struggles but feels it is his right to deny medication prescribed to me by my doctor. I am unsure where Walgreens draws the lines with their pharmacists, but does this mean he denies women the right to birth control and morning after pills? And what's the stance with fertility drugs? I share this story because I wish no other women have to go through something like this at a time when you're vulnerable and already suffering. I'm left in disbelief on how this can happen. How is this okay? I can't be the only one who has gone through this." After I walked out of Walgreens Thursday night without my prescription, I received an email notification that my prescription was ready at a location all the way across town. The pharmacist, Brian Renluk, I don't know, ultimately had it transferred to another location that had it in stock after I had left upset. Yesterday morning, I went to see my doctor for his help in making sure that pharmacist at the second location would give it to me. I picked up my prescription from that Walgreens with no problems. She went on to contact Walgreens' corporate office. She filed a complaint with the Arizona Board of Pharmacy. She says, at this point, I've done what I can to address the situation. Interviewed by the BBC, she told them the staff member at Walgreens was very short, not compassionate at all. And Walgreens issued a statement to the BBC saying it was looking into the matter, reached out to the patient and apologized for how the situation was handled. And no, not really. It didn't, no. She also says Walgreens has not reached out to her to apologize, but a store manager said she was sorry when she telephoned to flag the incident a day later. Oh, well, how nice. They're sorry. And this is, you know, this is one of those industries, retail, where there's a great deal of semi-monopolistic competition going on. For instance, Walgreens just gobbled up Rite Aid. So even though your store may still have Rite Aid on it, it's owned by Walgreens now and will eventually be branded as such. And these corporations hear only through their wallets. I don't have any Walgreens around me, but I got Rite Aids, and I can't go to Rite Aid anymore. And I've made that clear to Walgreens. That's really all I can do, but it's something I can do. They don't have to get my money. I don't get my prescriptions there because it's ridiculously more expensive than the small hospital-based pharmacy I use. But I have been known to go there to buy batteries and pens and, 10-pound bags of Reese's miniatures. We won't talk about that. But withholding, you know, you don't work for them, so you can't withhold your labor. The only thing we can do is withhold our money. But see, that's the kind of conscience the White Wing respects. Oh, he was exercising his conscience in the name of the poor little already dead fetus. Isn't he godly and Christian? But Geezer Disgustus and his little lackey minion, Sarah, will use social media to try to destroy a business that exercises their conscience. And by the way, the Supreme Court today gave us some more conscience law. They gave a pass to some business owner in Washington State who also had discriminated against a gay couple, telling the lower court to reconsider their ruling against the bigot, because snowflake consciences matter, and consciences matter if they have to do with fetuses or people wanting to get married and love each other in a relationship that is recognized at law. Oh, got a lot of conscience out there for that. Um, Well, that wasn't so. But if your conscience, on the other hand, says that even vicariously participating in crimes against humanity by providing services to one of the people committing the crimes against humanity violates your conscience, well, then that's not a closely held religious belief. And the Washington Post wants you to know that Sarah and that little fucking Nazi Stephen Miller have a right to eat their dinner in peace. Kind of reminds me of that old bumper sticker. No justice, no peace. Right? And golly Moses, I haven't even gotten around to Melanoma's jacket. You know, the one that she wore down to the border where she didn't see any of the children and didn't go to the concentration camps and didn't go to the cages. But it said, I really don't care, do you? And once again, the pearl clutchers and the hand wringers of the for-profit media said, well, don't pay attention to that. That's nothing. Yeah, okay. The only problem is the company, the edgy fashion company that made the jacket, they have a history. And it's not a good history. Not at all. The name of the company that made that jacket is Zara, Z-A-R-A. And at one point in time, they offered for sale a few years back a women's top with horizontal, narrow, black and white stripes with, get this, a great big humongous yellow Star of David over the left breast area. They looked shockingly like the uniforms that the people interned in death camps wore. When Zara got busted for that in 2007... Oh, I'm sorry. No, that was another thing they did. But when they got busted for that, they said, no, no, no. The star on the shirt is meant to be like the sheriff's star that a sheriff wore in the Old West. Bullshit! They also, in 2007, produced a line of handbags with a symbol on them that was perilously close to a swastika. They offered for sale a shirt that read, white is the new black. And that is that's the manufacturer that Melanoma Trump chose to promote. And by the way, the phrase that was on the back of the jacket that everybody says we should be ignoring and not talking about because, you know, civility. Well, that I don't care, that phrase, as is so often the case, has a history. Our buddy Flavio, if he's listening, can tell me if I've got this right. There's a phrase in Italian, me ne frego. I really don't care. Me ne frego. That was the slogan of the Italian Arditi, stormtroopers in World War I, who would go on after the war to form the core of Mussolini's fascist uprising. Among other things, the fascists were responsible for taking over the city of Fiume. And that led to Mussolini seizing power. Most people don't know that melanoma was actually born in a town in Slovenia that was part of fascist Italy. It was also part of the Third Reich. As one writer puts it, you cannot turn around in Novo Mesto without bumping into some monument that reminds you of their history. The symbols and slogans are extremely important there. Melanoma went to school there and she speaks Italian. There's simply no way she's not aware of the history of this slogan. This writer says the message of the jacket could not be any clearer. Melania was telling us that the Trumps are fascists and she's tired of pretending otherwise. Well, how about that? Isn't history cool? But again, we're not supposed to talk about that because that really doesn't mean anything. Right? Sure. So just to be clear, there's conscience. And then there's, you know, conscience. Steve in New York says, nah, it's more like sorry, not sorry. Nunc postulo. Note coming in from Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Subject line, Cold Civil War. One could make an argument that your Cold Civil War is not so cold anymore. What say you, sir? Well, they don't go from ice cold to blazing hot overnight. They have to be warmed up. They're like rancid leftovers. Terrace with a note from earlier. Bingo! You nailed it. If a baker can send away a gay customer, the Latino kitchen staff of any California restaurant can do the same to Republicans, Repiglicans, who have proven themselves to be morally equivalent to the SS, who are just following orders. Yeah, I'm guessing Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags never read that passage from To Kill a Mockingbird. Guessing she never read To Kill a Mockingbird. But there was her skanky old nasty old daddy engaging in blatant out front racism, posting a picture of some Latino gang members and saying that that was Nancy Pelosi's team for taking back the House. And I'm generally supportive of Nancy Pelosi. She's proven herself to be good at what she does. That's why the Democrats in the House have not wavered and not collaborated in large part with the Republican majority. But whoever handles her social media screwed up something fierce. At a rally over the weekend, Auntie Maxine, Representative Maxine Waters, said after the Red Hen incident, "Let's make sure we show up wherever we have to show up. If you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd and you push back on them and you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere." And I would say, what else is a person of conscience? Because, you know, you don't even... I know, big secret to the white wingers. You don't even have to be religious to have a conscience. I know they can't believe that, but it's true. And if you cannot act upon the demands of your conscience, then you are, by definition, engaging in silence, in acceptance by silence. Are you not? But still, whoever handles social media for Nancy Pelosi really stepped in it. On her verified Twitter account, she tweeted, "In the crucial months ahead, we must strive to make America beautiful again. Trump's daily lack of civility has provoked responses that are predictable but unacceptable. As we go forward, we must conduct elections in a way that achieves unity from sea to shining sea." And it was understood as a direct public and forceful condemnation of what Auntie Maxine said. Well, Nancy Pelosi's social media person is dead wrong. One, old white ladies should probably not lecture old black ladies on how to engage in objection to racist behavior. Two, I understand Nancy Pelosi's view of the optics of this. She doesn't want to gin up Trump's base, but they're already ginned up. And if it gets to where maggots from the Trump regime can't go out in public, good. You know, for fear of being shunned or shamed, good. Because that doesn't even begin to be commensurate with the horrors that they have perpetrated thousands of times over. And I think I'll probably puke if I see one more person quote Michelle Obama saying, "When they go low, we go high." Because that just doesn't always work. Because when you're dealing with what I refer to as the stump licker bunch, it's just not a viable strategy. Because they're going to keep going low. The most you can, you're not really going to shame them. The most you can do is shun them. And you know, when I saw the Mexican restaurant business with Kirsten Nielsen, I thought of Anthony Bourdain. And what a tireless advocate he was for the thousands upon thousands of kitchen workers from Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Ecuador, Peru, Panama, Nicaragua, who work like dogs to provide nice meals for mostly privileged white people who, in the case of your Kirsten Nielsens and your Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags, sit around mumbling and not even mumbling, often talking at full voice about how awful those illegals are. So, you know, screw them. Flavio says, "Fuck Walgreens, they're awful. My mom had 8 miscarriages. Fuck Walgreens." She wasn't, and no, her, the woman from the Walgreens story was not I could have handled Arteaga. It's the M-O-N-E. She was identified as Nicole M-O-N-E. And that's about what I didn't know how to pronounce. Flavio says, civil disobedience is a right and arguably a duty in a democracy. And Pelosi's disparagement of Representative Waters bespeaks her white privilege and is tone deaf. She's not a demagogue. She's stating the obvious. No collaboration. Those are fascists in power now. You don't play nice with fascists, period, full stop. And yes, damn straight I'm for pelting that little Nazi prick Stephen Miller with rotten eggs, tomatoes, and any available ordure if he shows his face in public. Absolutely. Those who stood by and did nothing and instead chose to be all genteel and play by Marcus of Queensberry rules will be remembered rather unfavorably if past histories are any indication. I tend to agree. Jim says, so there, I warned you. Oh yeah, Jim's seen this coming for a long time. For those who are schooled in the ways of fascism, fascism is not hard to spot. But it's awfully damn difficult to get the people who breathe the thin oxygen inside the beltway to acknowledge it when they see it. But it's all around us. And it's hard to miss if you are trained in history. Elbert from Rhode Island with a note. After Dim Leader passes on, I hope there's a political cartoon in the newspapers. Imagine that Dim Leader's standing in front of St. Peter's desk. All the dead from the Iraq War, American and Iraqi, are standing behind St. Peter. St. Peter tells Dim Leader, we took a vote. You're going to the other place. Elbert adds, I'm a type 2 diabetic. I have to test my blood twice a day. My sister went to the pharmacy today to get my blood test strips. She was told that my test strips cost $92. Luckily for me, I qualify for Medicare, plus I have a prescription for my test strips, so they'll only cost me $8. Oh, I know. Look, I'm technically not diabetic, but I still test. And the all you can do is hope that the Wally World brand is actually worth a damn. Because to get 100 test strips from Bayer or AccuCheck or any of those people, you're $100. Easy. More than $100 for the 100 count. Note coming from Darlene in Connecticut. Regarding Stephen Miller, it's the old American tradition to tar and feather. Don't forget the run out of town on a rail part. Lee in New York says, why are we surprised by Sarah? Celebrities risk being mobbed anytime they go out in public. Betsy DeVos got booed out of a public school. Rudy Giuliani got birthday boos at Yankee Stadium. Pruitt. At EPA couldn't fly because he would be stuck with people who oppose his policy. Maybe she should be referred to as Sarah Snowflake. Get a thicker skin or step away from the podium. But see, they love the power. Oh, and by the way, also while I was gone, there was a little Pity the Poor Maggots piece, and it showed up in several different places talking about how the young maggots from the Trump White House, the low-level staffers, they're having a hard time dating in Washington, D.C. because as soon as somebody finds out that they're a maggot, they tell them that they're a horrible person and to fuck off. And ask them things like, how many children did you kidnap today? Poor little maggots. And part of the argument being put forward for all of this foolishness is that, well, you know, we've got to have a return to civility. You know what? Anybody who says that has no working historical knowledge of how we got uncivil. The civil rights struggle was not an exercise in civility. There were bodies in an earthen dam in Neshoba County, Mississippi, that testified to that. People beaten nearly to death in Selma. Dogs and fire hoses turned on people in Birmingham. Churches bombed and burned. And that wasn't because Dr. King and SNCC and the other affiliated organizations weren't being civil enough. Hell, they were nonviolent. Couldn't be much more civil than that. Can we have our constitutional rights, please? And for that, murder and mayhem was unleashed on them. I'm so old, I remember back when Newton Leroy Gingrich, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, was just a little loudmouth pissant backbencher from Gwinnett County, Georgia. And it seemed like every day in the local news, because I was working down there at the time, there'd be some outrageous, incivil bullshit that he had mumbled or shouted from the rooftops, more likely, about Democrats in general. And he worked that gig into a speakership of the House of Representatives. You remember, when he was Speaker of the House and he was going on and on about the lack of morals and characters of Bill Clinton, when he was stuffed so far up Callista that if she sneezed, you could see his smiling face. You know, while he was married. It goes back that far. The incivility goes back to Jerry Falwell and the moral majority, passing judgment on everybody who didn't believe like them. But now, all of a sudden, people who object to fucking crimes against humanity, we're supposed to be civil about it. How thin is the oxygen that the pearl-clutching, hand-wringing class breathes? Jesus! I want to get the Washington Post clear, because they're obviously our primary nominee for Moran Monday this evening. What did the pearl clutchers and hand wringers at the Washington Post want the staff to do there at the Red Hen? Just serve her and smile? The waiter, who's gay, is supposed to just, yes, Sarah, here's your trough. Go ahead and get your front trotters in. Yes, you can snort and grunt all you want to. Would you like me to bring you some of our Hispanic kitchen workers so you can spit on them from time to time, Sarah? Would that make you feel better, Sarah? I mean, for God's sakes, I guess they were just supposed to go along with it, keep their heads down, because that's what you do when fascism has your country by the short and curlies. I mean, it's a real philosophical discussion. It's a real philosophical debate worthy of our attention. What do you do when you are presented with a genuine challenge to your closely and deeply held morals and ethics and perhaps even religious beliefs? Because, see, with all this religious belief bullshit floating around there, they're acting like the only religious beliefs are white wing religious beliefs. You could even make an argument that the holdings of the Supreme Court actually establish white wing evangelical Christianity as a state religion. And I'm sorry, being a fascist is not a protected legal class, at least not yet. Maybe it's the yet part. By the way, 19 minutes to go in the program, and I want to thank John for jumping in on fundraising and taking us down to 490. And I want to announce a challenge courtesy of Charlene in Rhode Island. Here's a welcome back Bob challenge, Charlene says. $100 on the table if people will meet it. And Charlene will double your money. So I'll count John in there. John just got doubled to 20. And if we can get 9 more people, the challenge will be met. And that will be tremendous, and it'll mean we'll only then have another 300 to go to finish fundraising for the month of June. So please respond to Charlene's challenge. It means a very great deal, and thank you very kindly, Charlene, for making it. That's tremendous. Note coming from Lee in New York, restaurant staff. I've been warned not to offend the restaurant staff, otherwise you never know how that meal was prepared. Yummy, isn't it? And most restaurant staff are far more professional. Would Sarah rather have had her food spat in? Does she want one of those chocolate pies? You know, from the movie. Right. But this all, I suppose, does have a certain superficiality to it, because there's deadly dangerous stuff going on. Geezer Disgustus actually called for an end to due process. He doesn't want judges to determine the legal status of people seeking asylum or trying to get into the United States at all. And so, replete with her pearls and her smoking gimlet eye, And her fuchsia suit that, or top or whatever, that burned out the white balance on the TV cameras. Sarah appeared before the press today to, well, defend fascism.
Illegally should be sent back with no court cases, no judges. Does the president believe that undocumented immigrants have no due process rights whatsoever?
Virtually all Americans agree that it makes no sense that an illegal alien sets one foot on American soil and then they would go through a 3 to 5 year judicial process to be...
Okay, so he said, does... You get that? She can't help it. She just lies. God only knows what her children are going to turn out to be, but then again, look at what Mike Huckabee's children turned out to be. I mean, she's standing right there at the podium. Virtually all Americans agree that it's wrong for people trying to enter the United States to have a judicial process? Well, that's just a goddamn lie. Virtually all Americans don't agree that we throw the Constitution out the window simply because a bigot, a xenophobe, and an ignorant syphilitic monstrosity is sitting in the office of the president. No, we don't agree. In fact, as far as the dead enders and hard cases, the cancerous knot of maggots, you know, that's about 33-35% who undeniably agree. But that wasn't the question, what Americans think. The question was, what does the president think? But Sarah can't open her mouth without lying.
Removed from the country. Thousands of illegal aliens are removed every month without seeing an immigration judge as a result of procedures in current law, including voluntary removal and expedited removal. Just because you don't see a judge doesn't mean you aren't receiving due process. The president is focused on securing our borders. And
just because you don't see a judge does mean you're not getting due process. Courts provide. Courts are the guardians of due process. It's not that complicated. The sheriff can't provide due process. The goddamned ICE monsters can't provide due process. The Border Patrol has no interest in due process whatsoever. The National Guard is not in the due process business. If it is not provided judicially, it is not provided. It's that simple. But this thing has broader implications. Once you start denying due process for one group of people, it becomes a little bit easier to deny it for the next group. And in point of fact, we found that out today over in the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court held that, shucks, no, there wasn't no racism in the way that all the ethnic minorities got their votes diluted by gerrymandering in Texas. Why, hell no! Shoot! No kidding. It really happened. And it happened while everybody was talking about, you know, Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags and whether she could have dinner and bullshit like that. But, yeah. It's another horrible decision from a group of horrible people. The case was called Abbott versus Perez. And the Voting Rights Act was under attack again. And the people who don't like for, you know, the wrong people to vote won again. Whenever a child, and this is writing for the majority, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, said, whenever a challenger claims that a state law was enacted with discriminatory intent, the burden of proof lies with the challenger, not the state. The allocation of the burden of proof and the presumption of legislative good faith are not changed by a finding of past discrimination. The historical background of a legislative enactment is one evidentiary source relevant to the question of intent. But we have never suggested that past discrimination flips the evidentiary burden on its head. The problem is that the plaintiffs and petitioners went into this case awash in present evidence of the intent of the Texas legislature to dilute and diminish the votes of ethnic minorities in the state of Texas. Sonia Sotomayor wrote the dissent, not that you know, has no force of law. And so the ability of the people that, Republicans and maggots don't like to vote. Well, those people's ability to vote it may just disappear entirely. And it's especially useful this year with the Republican majority under threat from the November 6th elections in terms of congressional, House races. And now, writing a dissent in Carpenter versus United States, Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch has decided he just doesn't like the Fourth Amendment much at all. If you like to read that kind of thing, again, it's the dissent in Carpenter versus United States. You can find it at supremecourt.gov, the opinion. And by the time you get done with it, you'll find out that Neil Gorsuch is every bit the fascist we thought he was. So, look out. Tara says, yes, yes, would Smokey Hustlebags rather have more sores in her mouth today? Well played, Tara. Nice use of the word more. More sores. But, due process, we don't need no stinking due process, says Sarah. But in terms of for-profit media silliness, this is good, just to sort of wrap things up here as we move toward the end of the program. And again, there's $90 worth of a $100 challenge remaining on the table that maybe we could knock down in 8 minutes, please. Kate Baldwin over at CNN got a bad case of the civilities. She got it in an interview with David Leopold, an immigration attorney, who knows a little bit about what's going on at the border. By the way, blast from the past. Here's a little bit of history. Reports now that men and boys are being kept in rooms standing and so packed together that they cannot tell any longer whether it is day or night. Almost as if they were in a shut-up, railroad car. That's part of it. But, and this is kind of fun, David Leopold schooled Kate Baldwin when she tried to clutch at her pearls over civility.
Have me, Kate.
So what are the rights of illegal immigrants? How are those rights different from an American citizen when it comes to the court system?
Well, generally, everybody has the right in this country to due process and to go to court and to make their case and to be heard by the judge. And when the Congress wrote the law, they wrote it, thinking that the president would apply the law in good faith and, to protect the country. But the problem right now is that we have a president who appears to be applying the law in a way that, separates families, and now he wants to gut due process. So there are nooks and crannies, provisions in that law, which could conceivably give the president the opportunity to take away the right to a judge, if you can imagine that, to take away.
But I actually,
away.
That's, That's very interesting, because that potentially the president's saying, you come here illegally, you get sent out, you should get sent out immediately.
Right.
And the first thing I thought is this within the president's powers?
Well, you know, there are certain interpretations. I would argue no. I mean, the idea here is that the president is supposed to enforce the law in good faith, with an idea toward national security and border security. And locking up kids and then gutting due process, taking away the right to go to a hearing before does not serve border security, does not serve any of those interests. This is a country, Kate, where we were founded on fairness and freedom. Americans are all about fairness and freedom. The immigration law is harsh, it's true, and used in the wrong hands, well, as it is right now by the President of the United States, Donald Trump, you know, it can be used as a battering ram. And I think we have to be mindful that this is an administration that's tried to ban an entire religion. This is an administration that
has... Let's just say that's not what the policy ended up being in the 3.0 version of it. Continue, please.
Okay, well, it also is an administration that has threatened our local communities that want to enforce the law as they see fit for not enforcing immigration law. I have no doubt that this administration, Donald Trump, who's advised by, you know, a white nationalist, Stephen Miller in the...
Oh, okay, so that's the moment. He refers to Stephen Miller, who is a Nazi, or at least a fascist, as a white nationalist, okay? And this is what's going to bring out Kate Baldwin's pearls.
Enforce the law as they see fit for not enforcing immigration law. I have no doubt that this administration, Donald Trump, who's advised by, you know, a white nationalist, Stephen Miller in the White House, that the Secretary of Homeland Security...
I don't know if you want to go as far to I mean, let's not... I just did an entire segment about civility here. I don't know if you want to call Stephen Miller a white nationalist.
Well, it's not an uncivil thing. I would argue that it's a fact. But, okay, look...
Honestly, I have not seen that.
What, do you live under a rock, Kate?
Well, look at what... The types of policies that we've seen from this administration. Look who's being targeted by this administration. You know, the point is that the law, Kate, should be used fairly. The point is that, you know, Americans love due process. America is all about due process. And when we see a tweet from the president on a Sunday decrying judges, saying that there should be no judges, that people shouldn't have a chance... Immigration law is complicated, Kate, and if somebody comes into the United States, right, they may have been trafficked here. They may have the right to asylum, to stay here. They may be the victim in the United States if somebody's encountered who never entered legally and doesn't have papers. He or she may be the victim of domestic violence or trafficking or some other crime and may have the right to stay here, may have the right to a visa. That's why we have judges. That's why we have, courts. And to say willy-nilly, we're not going to use the courts or we shouldn't have courts, that's throwing out prejudging people who really need, you know, need due process. And if it starts with immigrants, how far does it go? This is an administration that has talked about denaturalizing American citizens recently.
Well, let's.
Yeah, let's. There was no call for her to accuse him of incivility for simply describing Stephen Miller very mildly as what Stephen Miller most assuredly is. God damn! His own co-workers say, as I pointed out last week, they describe him as Stephen, it's a quote, Stephen is Waffen SS. And anybody who doesn't know what Waffen SS means can just look it up. Don't have time to explain. It is not incivil to call a Nazi a Nazi. The larger question is how much leeway and does a Nazi deserve? When you know what a Nazi intends to do, when you know what their history is, when you know what they believe. I mean, Jesus, this country went through a near 100-year spasm of the freakouts, lest someone be perceived as a communist. God knows how many thousands of people's lives were ruined over the accusation of being a communist. Some who were, some who weren't. But who arguably had a right to their own political beliefs. To this day, members of unions sign oaths swearing that they're not part of a communist organization. Interestingly, there's nothing in that oath that says they're not part of a fascist organization. So once again, the double standard applies. Ooh, we mustn't call the Nazis Nazis. That's not civil. God damn it, Kate Baldwin would probably preach civility when people were being herded into the cattle cars. Oh, wait, see above. So that's the program for this evening. Again, tonight and tomorrow night are two-hour programs. Because I'll be subbing for Malloy here in about an hour. And we all send out our best wishes to Mike and our sincerest hopes that... that he gets better quickly. Thanks, everybody. It's awfully good to be back this Moran Monday evening. Thanks to John and thanks to Charlene for the challenge. Hopefully the challenge will be met. And maybe it would have been met in the third hour of the program, but there's no third hour of the program tonight. But hopefully it will be met. Nine folks at $10 a piece. Hey, how about nine $10 a month subscribers this evening? Because the tail end of the month is kind of lean for subscribers. That would be awfully nice. But one way or another, thank you all for keeping the program on the air. Thank you for spending your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Remember, I'll just say so long for about an hour. You can catch me over on Progressive Voices. Please, I keep the stream up, but please, if you're going to listen to Malloy, listen to Malloy on Progressive Voices. It's good to see those numbers, especially when we trend toward the top of TuneIn's list at that time of the evening. So I'll catch you about an hour, and always, Gina, it's all for you. See you in a bit. Later.